welcome to another edition of Money Talk. I'm Neil Kreisel, and Diane Duvernay are your hosts every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 11, and on Saturdays at 6. We're brought to you by Cornerstone Home Lending, whose highly trained and experienced team takes great pride in helping people with home financing, offering competitive rates and a wide array of loan programs. American Riviera Bank, smart banking for smart people in Santa Barbara at Figueroa and Anacapa Streets and in Montecito's Upper Village. And Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm in Santa Barbara, providing its clients with the personal care and attention of a small independent firm, coupled with the vast resources of a major financial institution.
Hi, Neil. How are you?
Well, you know, when I started out as a Wall Street analyst, there was only one TV show, and that was Wall Street Week. So if you wanted to be on television, you had to be invited on Wall Street Week. And then over the years, CNN, CNBC was formed, and there were opportunities. And I thought that was the height where you could be a talking head on one of those cable shows. But on Saturday night, things broke through when we had a financial guy hosting Saturday Night Live.
I know. Elon did a good job, I thought.
Well, if I would have known that there's an opportunity in the financial markets to host Saturday Night Live, I wouldn't have retired 25 years ago. I would have stuck it out. Maybe, you know, that would be really fun, wouldn't it?
Well, you know, I think people think of Elon as a little bit more than just a financial guy.
Oh, okay. Maybe that was.
But it was quite fascinating to look at what Dogecoin, where it ended up after the show. Considerably.
Yes. So by any chance, do we have a guest today?
We do. We are thrilled to have with us. Well, I feel like, Neil, you should introduce her.
This is a very important show because we have the most important artist in Southern California with us today. She's French, so I'm going to conduct the rest of the interview in French.
Don't worry, we would not let that happen for all of you listening.
Yeah. So Barrett Boyson, welcome.
Bonjour.
That's about it for me.
Good. Well, you already you messed up my name. So
What did I say wrong?
It's Boisson.
Boisson, like poisson.
Like croissant.
Like rhymes with fish, right?
Barrett Boisson. So. So your French is done here.
Yeah, right. That was it. Well, I have the New York French. It's a little bit different from, you know, Parisian French.
Very different.
Thanks. I think we better get to the articles. So the first article is from the Wall Street Journal, and it's basically helping us understand what's going on in the stock market today. And the article begins by saying there's one driver above all, and that's the Federal Reserve's easy money policy that has historically fueled financial booms, and this is no exception. The 10-year Treasury bond yield is now below inflation, which means real yields are deeply negative, which is only the second time in 40 years. Now, one person from Harvard, a Harvard economist, Jeremy Stein, said equity markets at a minimum are priced to perfection on the assumption that rates will be low for a long time. And some stocks valuations are justified only if interest rates stay extremely low. And if there in fact is an increase in inflation, the general expectation is that there could be some real problems because justification for the kinds of multiples we see today can only be based upon the kind of zero interest rates that we have today. So inflation expectation and what the Fed is going to do is really the thing that investors have to look for.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's been, you know, and those investors as of late who have been banking on rates going up have really been hurt in the last few weeks, as rates have not gone up and, you know, the inflation trade has really gotten beaten up in the market.
And which is really interesting, the day before in the Wall Street Journal the Streetwise column, the title was Investors Aren't Ready, but Signs Point to Inflation. the article basically is talking about things that are happening that are, is in the author's view is going to lead to inflation. One is that central banks, particularly the Fed, are less concerned about inflation. Two is that politics have shifted pretty much in all Western countries from concerns about deficits to spend now and worry about it later. The labor costs are going to feel upward pressure if there's a shortage of workers, which there seems to be now. And the article concludes that the cost of being wrong on inflation is very high. And that is, if investors buying a 10-year treasury at 1.6% would be really hurt if inflation, in fact, goes over the 2%, and the amount of pain, as the article concludes, would be substantial. The next article is how, all of this is pretty depressing, is entitled, How
You Are Always a Ray of Optimism and Sunshine in this segment.
I like to begin the show with some, you know, reality checks here. And this article from the Wall Street Journal as well this weekend is How to Spot a Bubble, a Field Guide. And the article takes a historic look at bubbles. And it goes back to the Dutch tulip bulb. It goes all the way up to current Bitcoin and SPACs. And talks about how when there are major optimistic moments, it tends to be couched in terms of this is a new thing, whatever the thing is, whether it was the kind of tulips that would never die and grow faster, or SPACs that would permit people to go, companies to go public with less friction from regulators. Technology tends to provide an opportunity for investors to put any valuation they want on a stock. And that creates speculation. And while innovation is important over the long term, it can cause disruption in the marketplace when combined with, as the article concludes, with leverage, which we're seeing a lot of, where people are buying stocks on leverage, which means that if, in fact, there is a bubble, it could be a significant pain to be felt by everyone.
Well, I think it's also, though, important to point out that there is a bubble in those very speculative SPACs, Doge coin, or the likes of that speculative investing. However, when you look at the broad market and the more mainstream investments, there, you know, consumer spending is still strong. There is a lot of optimism still on the market. And I think there are still legs for mainstream markets or companies to make more money. That said, whenever there's a bubble in any sector of the economy, you're at risk of that bubble, if it explodes, you know, taking down the rest of the market. But if you look at the fundamentals of the of companies, they are making more money than anticipated, despite the pandemic.
Yes, of course, the problem is that the valuations, the multiple on next year's earnings is about as high as it's ever been. So yes, it's true that they're doing well, but the problem is, can you justify that multiple with interest rates up where they historically have been? Right now you can justify it because the capitalization rate is influenced by the low interest rates. But if interest rates were to go up, even with good earnings, we could be faced with a bursting of the bubble.
And I think that also assumes, though, that the interest rates are going to go up it's quickly, which typically interest rates do not go up quickly, that they go up in quarter point increments, which in some people's opinion could be too slow. And I think that there's a lot more fear regarding interest rates going up than is necessary at this time.
And the last article we have today is about medical expense deductions. And there's a new one that I didn't know about until I just read it in the Wall Street Journal. And that is the IRS just announced that COVID-related expenses qualify as medical expense deductions. And that means that if you buy any personal protective equipment to prevent COVID, including hand sanitizer, face masks, disinfecting wipes, that is now deductible from your taxes. So all of us that bought, you know, gallons and gallons of sanitizer that we can't use anymore, we can put that together with other medical expenses and get a deduction.
Right. But you also have to realize that you still have to be over 7.5% of your AGI. So perhaps for retired people that might work who don't have a very big income, but us working people, it's still a difficult threshold to cross.
Yeah. And it's a one that you don't want to meet if you don't have to, because Correct. The implications are not good. You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
For prospective homebuyers, one of the most important steps of the loan process is getting clear and honest information from someone who will speak plainly and truthfully about loan programs and options.
I'm Kelly Marsh, Vice President, California, of Cornerstone Home Lending, where our highly skilled and experienced team takes great pride in helping clients obtain home financing with honest, knowledgeable, fast, friendly, and efficient service. As a Santa Barbara native who has spent the past 20 years in the mortgage industry and has closed over 4,000 loans, I'd appreciate the opportunity to earn your business and invite you to visit thekellymarshteam.com or call my office at 805-563-1100 to learn more about how Cornerstone Home Lending can help you determine the best way to manage mortgage debt to achieve a more stable financial future.
Licensed by the Department of Business Oversight under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. California Residential Mortgage Lending Act license number 41DB072220. California Financial Lending Law license number 60DB072528. Loan originator NMLS number 245822. Not a commitment to loan. Equal housing opportunity.
If you have trouble handling your anger, get help. If someone you love is hurting or scaring you, get help. There is a full-service domestic violence agency in Santa Barbara County, which offers emergency shelter, counseling, transitional housing, anger management, and teen outreach programs. Its name is Domestic Violence Solutions for Santa Barbara County. Call their 24-hour helpline at 964-5245. Domestic Violence Solutions for Santa Barbara County. Putting an end to domestic violence.
Did you know that domestic violence sends more than 500 women and children to emergency shelters every year? There is a place where all family members affected by domestic violence can get help. Domestic Violence Solutions for Santa Barbara County, with four 24-hour phone lines to help. In Santa Barbara, call 964-5245. In Santa Maria, call 925-2160. In Lompoc, call 736-0965. And in Santa Ynez, call 686-4390.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Cornerstone Home Lending. Since 1988, a mortgage banker and direct lender that believes in providing in-depth loan consulting to its customers in a personalized and honest manner.
And we can be reached at 805-564-1290, or you could email us at moneytalk1290@gmail.com. So if you're just joining us, we have the pleasure of having Barrett Boisson on the show with us, and she is a self-trained LA artist and has a really great repertoire of work. So tell us, Barrett, how did you get involved in art? Because, you know, what I think is really unique about you and your story is that you never even picked up a paintbrush until the age of 30. So tell us about your early life and how, where you think the influences of art really help to get you to the point you're at today?
Thank you for that question. It's true that I did not pick up a paintbrush until I was 30 and don't even remember taking any kind of art classes, but my parents were both artists and I was born in Florence, Italy. So I've always been surrounded by art. And from Europe, we went down to South America, and again, I was really influenced by all the colors and just the different cultures. And I think later it came into play in my art. I did not think that I would be an artist. I thought that I would be a diplomat or an ambassador, and I hoped to get people together to, you know, talk and get to know one another better. And I studied international politics in school. And when I became an artist, I was like, oh my God, all this, you know, illustrious education for nothing. And now I realize that it really wasn't for nothing, that, you know, all these stories, the histories and everything come into play in my art. So it was kind of a circuitous route, but I think it's all, you know, kind of followed an interesting path to get me where I am.
So what took your family from Europe to South America?
My mom got pregnant and she was not married. And so she left to go to Europe to have me in Florence. My mom was an artist and always imagined painting in Italy. So that's where she ended up. And my grandfather started the first shrimping company in Suriname, which is Dutch Guiana, which was Dutch Guiana. Now it's just Suriname. So my mom moved to Suriname. Eventually, she met my French stepfather in French Guiana, which is the country neighboring it. And so we lived there most of my childhood. And those were really formative years for me. And then eventually we came to the States for a couple of years.
Wow. So that nomadic kind of childhood that you had, how do you think that played into you wanting, you know, obviously bringing together people as in that political science, you know, international affairs? Do you think that really is why your art, you know, especially when I think about your installation of Inspiring Greatness, what do you think that's really, tell us a little bit about Inspiring Greatness and what that means and what you hope to accomplish through that work? Because I really see, you know, a hand in hand with your education and that series.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. And I do think that it is tied closely together. After coming from South America, we lived in the States for a few years and I was very disoriented. I was, Neil asked me about living in Dallas, Texas for a few years. And I rarely mention that because I feel like it doesn't have a lot of resonance with my life. I was really out of place in Dallas where, you know, all the girls seemed to know what they were doing and they all had normal lunches. And my mom was packing, you know, balmy goring leftovers in my lunch pack. And, you know, I was just wrong. I was smaller than everybody and browner than everybody. And so they shipped me off to boarding school in France. And I just feel like I've always had a feeling of being an outsider, of being different. And I think that I thrive best in communities where there are different colors and different cultures and different religions and not such a like staid environment. And so when I moved to California initially after college, I was having a hard time. I was just very blue. A friend invited me to start painting. I'd never picked up a paintbrush and I didn't know what to do, but I started painting my heroes. And when I started painting my heroes, it turns out that a lot of my heroes were of color. And I didn't even think of it as a series at the time. I just thought that I was kind of paying homage to these people who I really looked up to and respected, you know, normal people who had done extraordinary things. And it was Muhammad Ali and Martin Luther King. There's Abraham Lincoln, Rosa Parks. So it just started like that. And I do. I did feel some kind of camaraderie with people who had struggled and who had felt, you know, challenged in their environment.
So while you were painting these, you know, if I can say these greats that really have made such a huge impact on our world, our society, and especially our country, did you have a sense that you were trying to inspire the people looking at the art to do something? To, you know, did, when you were painting it, did you have that kind of thought in your mind of hoping that, you know, the end result of the person looking or appreciating your art would be called to action in some way?
Yes, definitely more a little later, but I, because initially I was just, you know, painting and paying homage to these people, but I definitely felt like what I lacked in words, in properly articulating my feelings and what they represented, that maybe I could do in paintings. And I thought that it might render these people more accessible, that if people, if viewers took the time to read about these people, they kind of invested time in it, learned about it, that maybe they would understand why these people were so important to me.
And you're still involved in highlighting important people in our society. You've done a wonderful painting of one of our chief justices, homage to her, which we really love. So you haven't stopped even after the exhibit was over.
Exactly. I think of it as a continuing series. I continue to paint people who inspire me. I did Emma Gonzalez, a young woman who spoke out about the gun violence that happened in her school in Florida. I painted Greta Thunberg. I continue to paint people as they become relevant and inspire me. And yes, Ruth Bader Ginsburg is one of my greatest heroes.
So just to let you know that you shouldn't feel strange that you felt a little bit out of place in Dallas. Whenever I fly through Dallas going back to New York, I feel very strange too. You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
When a bank is owned by the community and invests in the community, it answers to a different call. It's personal. It's driven by your needs, not ours. Welcome to American Riviera Bank, based right here in Santa Barbara with branches in Montecito and Goleta. Our customers know us for personal service, every day, every way.
You can bank on us.
Bank on us.
Bank on us!
American Riviera Bank. Bank on better.
I was in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean when it happened. There was a sudden jolt and our submarine crashed on the seafloor. We were in total darkness.
That's Dr. Dejana Figueroa, a marine biologist and STEM teacher, talking about a deep sea dive she'll never forget.
It's funny, when I was a kid, I was afraid of the ocean. And there I was, 2 miles below the surface. But as a scientist, you prepare for that. Using our training and a little creativity, we fixed the sub and finished our experiments. The dive was just too important. Every dive gives us glimpses at things few people ever get to see. Glowing creatures, fiery undersea volcanoes. When we got back to the surface, I kissed the ground and called my mom, of course. But you know what? I wouldn't trade that dive for anything.
Dr. Figueroa uses her passion for STEM to discover new things and make the world a better place. She can STEM, so can you. Check out She Can STEM for more stories and inspiration. A message from the Ad Council.
Whoa, long time no see. It's me, the Rock t-shirt in the back of your closet. Dude, remember? You crowd surfed in me, man.
But you haven't worn me in like forever.
I get it, you're retired, but I still got some rock left in me. So take me to Goodwill, where I can really make a difference.
Your donations to Goodwill create jobs, training programs, and education assistance for people in your community. To find your nearest donation center, go to goodwill.org. Donate stuff. Create jobs. A message from Goodwill and the Ad Council.
Welcome Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence.
And if you're just joining us, we have Barrett Boisson, who is an artist and had an installation presented by the National Civil Rights Museum called Inspiring Greatness, Words and Deeds in the Art of Barrett Boisson. So thank you so much for being with us again. And before the break, we were talking about your Inspiring Greatness series and how you continue to keep it going through various people that you encounter that inspire you. Tell us, how difficult was it to get your exhibit picked up by the National Civil Rights Museum in Memphis, Tennessee? And tell us a little bit about that process.
It was actually really easy. I think that just all the stars aligned. And I don't think that an artist might have as easy a time getting a solo museum show for the longest, period of time. It was 3 months during the summer when everybody is traveling to Memphis. And a friend of mine, one of my closest friends, Todd, happened to be down in Memphis. And he visited the museum and called me up and said, you have to be in this museum. This museum is just a perfect fit for your work. So I just very casually sent the president of the museum a note card, which had a painting of my Rosa Parks on it, and said that I heard great things about her museum. And if she wanted to know my work, that I would be happy to show it to her. I was on my way to France for the summer. The day before I flew to France, I got an email out of the blue from them without any conversation asking if I would have a solo show the following summer, in these hallowed halls. So I was thrilled. I spent my summer abroad, came back, and just started painting in my friend's garage for 7 months in preparation for the show. I have to say that I had left Los Angeles and wasn't sure where I was going to be living at the time. I was debating between moving to France and moving to Montecito. And since they asked me to participate in the show, I said to myself that it was going to be really hard to paint these paintings in France and get them to United States. And so I settled in Montecito. I didn't have a studio. I used a friend's garage, and it all worked out really well. I have an amazing support group. A bunch of friends flew to Memphis for the show, and it was one of the highlights of my career and life.
So Barrett, I have to say, for all the artists listening out there, they're probably hating you a little bit right now. You're self-taught. You didn't pick up a paintbrush until 30, and then you just sent a note card to a museum, and they sent you an email back saying, sure, yeah, let's have you run for 3 months.
Yeah, so but in all fairness, it's like, the comedian that, goes on Johnny Carson, and everyone says that he's 50 years old and he's an overnight success, but he's been playing for 30 years in little clubs. So, you've been painting for a long time before this. So
since I was 30, so it's not that long. Let's not exaggerate, Neil. I don't know.
I knew that comment was going to get him in trouble.
I know a friend that used to estimate her, tell people her age was 10 years older than she was. So people would say, you look terrific.
Well, it's true that I do look fabulous at 90. But the point is well taken. I think when I started painting and I realized how little I knew that I didn't want to take any courses. I didn't want to know how little I knew. I didn't want to all of a sudden be stymied by the fact that I had no sense of perspective. I had a sense of perspective, I just didn't know how to get there, how to do it. So I have no rules in my art. And I've kind of, you know, that's kind of been the leitmotif of my career. I just don't stop myself. I don't hesitate to make bold moves. And, you know, it's a little bit like, what's that movie with Peter Sellers, the Gardner movie? You know, what you don't know, you just do, and it works out.
Well, it's worked out better for you than some of the Republican voters who also don't believe in education. But that's another story.
So back to you, Barrett. What advice do you have for artists that are listening that perhaps haven't had the same philosophy on their art and hence have gotten stymied in some way or another? What would you say to them? What advice would you say to them to help them kind of come out of their shell and find their niche, whatever that might be?
That's a great question. I think that I am particularly fortunate in that I didn't have any training, not only because I can take chances, but also because I have a different perspective, that my artwork looks different, that it's unique to me. And I think that's why I started getting commissions really shortly after I started painting. Within months, I was commissioned to do a wedding portrait for Sumner Redstone, for example, and then Tom Cruise, and you know, and it just continued, Drew Barrymore. But my paintings looked different. They had a unique voice. And I think that's part of the problem with people who are amazing artists, but don't maybe have a unique voice. So I would, and I've heard about that, you know, you come out of art school and you kind of have to find your own voice, sometimes unlearning what you know. So what I would do, what I would suggest to artists is to kind of look for your own voice and make it unique, and just be really dedicated to not only to making art, but thinking of it as a business, which I started to do about 10 years after I started painting. And that's made a big difference as well.
And speaking of business, how does an artist price their product? How do you know what to charge?
Well, that's really interesting. Thank you for that question. I want my artwork to be accessible. So I don't want it to be too expensive, but I have put time into it. And I do put value on these pieces. I do value them. I think that, so it's kind of a fine line, but I don't want to undercharge. I would rather people pay me in increments, but pay me what the painting for me is worth. And then I think at that point, they feel better about having made an investment in something that the artist feels is valuable.
But when you price an art piece of art, it's different from pricing almost any other product. Most products in this capitalistic society are priced on a combination of labor costs and material costs. You can't do that with art. So it must be a challenge sometimes to say, particularly if it's not a commission, if it's a painting that you've already painted, is what is it worth to you to part with it? And I guess that's one of the business issues that you confront all the time.
Well, one thing I hear consistently is that I need to charge more. So, and your wife has told me also that I need to charge more, Neil. No, I'm kidding.
She wants another picture for her birthday.
When I paint a family portrait or a commission, I do devote a lot of time to it, and I feel like I'm probably losing money, but it still in my head sounds like a lot of money. It is a fine line, but I'm happy making what I make And I want my clients, people who love it, to be able to afford it.
You're listening to Money Talk. You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
It's a fact. Successful wealth management is built on strategies that focus on the big picture, take a long-term view, and establish deep and valued relationships. Hello, I'm Diane Duva, founding partner at Arlington Financial Advisors, Santa Barbara's trusted family guide, empowering you to make more informed and confident decisions. At Arlington Financial Advisors, we bring order and balance to your financial life by monitoring and managing risk so you can focus on your work, family, and enjoying the moment. We are a fully independent firm offering strategic financial planning, estate and tax planning, and private money management. Our plans and portfolios are handcrafted using a rigorous and disciplined approach, supported by a consistent yet highly personalized client experience. Our clients look to Arlington Financial Advisors as a home away from home, a comfortable place to protect what they've accomplished while they prepare for what comes next. Please visit arlingtonfinancialadvisors.com or call me, Diane Duva, at 805-699-7300.
Hey, do you know someone who's looking for something fun to do this summer? Well, the Ensemble Theater Company is offering two programs for young people. Here's Director of Education and Outreach, Brian McDonald.
Our summer programs fall under the umbrella of the Young Actors Conservatory Program, etcsb.org. And there are two that we're offering this summer, which is the Camp Broadway for ages age 12. And then there is the Musical Theater Performance Workshop, which will be doing a production of Zombie Prom. They are tuition-based programs, but there are scholarships available, and people should definitely check that out on our website, etcsb.org. And they can go to the Education and Outreach section.
To find out more about the Ensemble Theater Company's summer programs for young people, go to etcsb.org. That's etcsb.org. Or call 805-512-5223.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by American Riviera Bank, making your life easier with cutting-edge technology, mobile deposits, free use of every ATM machine in the country, and a level of service other banks can only dream about.
So, Barrett, you have a very flourishing commission business where people commission you to paint something, whatever they want. What is your process with that? Because I've got to imagine that's very different than your process of creating a new piece of art from you. So tell us what that looks like and how you go about doing that.
Yes, you're so right. Painting a portrait is completely different. And I want to know as much as I can about the person so that it's not just like a one-dimensional physical representation. I don't want to copy a photograph. I really want to understand their face. But more than that, I want to know who they are, what kind of music they like, what their favorite poem is, what their hobbies are. I just want to infuse the artwork with as much personal detail as I can. And right now I am working on a birthday portrait for a local woman in town. I'm going to try not to say too much. But her family got together and told me everything that is significant to her. And I'm trying to incorporate it into the painting in some way that makes sense. So, it's really fun because they are so meaningful. These portraits are so meaningful to the recipients. And, you know, long after they've received it, it seems to still resonate with them. So it's a gift to me as well.
And so with the portraits and the commission pieces, I'm on your website and I'm looking at some of them. How do you determine if you're going to do a portrait, or if they say it isn't a portrait of that person, some of your other pieces that were commissioned that are not portraits, where do you go from there, and how do you talk to the clients to find out what is would be meaningful to them?
Most of the commissions are for portraits. A couple of, you know, times or sometimes a client will want a piece specifically for a spot in their home that isn't representational. Then I can work with the size and the color and things like that. If you are looking at a portrait that looks abstract, it's for a specific reason. And I think you might be looking at Ken Saxon's portrait. And that's a deeply personal portrait to him. I don't even think that I can explain it publicly, but they consider it a family portrait. It's very meaningful to him. Ken doesn't even want me to share the photo of it because it's so deeply personal. And I think the Montecito Journal interviewed him and asked him what his favorite possession was, and it was indeed that painting. So, but that one is really unique in that way. Usually the portraits are representations of the family.
And so given that you now split time between both New York, California, and France, how do you find running businesses in New York versus California, and how is it different, or is it the same, or even the international piece of business?
That's a good question. I'm sure that there are differences, but I think it's mostly about logistics. For example, for a client in France, I painted a really large portrait of Sitting Bull, for example. I painted it on canvas, but I didn't, not on stretched canvas. So I bought the actual just canvas fabric, nailed it to my wall, painted it, and then rolled it up and delivered it myself to France. So I think that's just kind of a logistical thing. And now I have another family portrait in France. I think doing business around the world is just easier these days. You know, with Venmo, everybody is using that kind of, actually, I don't know if Venmo is international, but people do wire deposits. And it's, I make delivering, especially to France, work.
But so
a personal necessary,
exactly.
Right?
I'll deliver for free.
So in terms of New York versus L.A. or New York or Santa Barbara, the typical way people sell paintings is through galleries. But you're not associated with a gallery, are you?
No, I've had a couple of shows in galleries, but I've never been associated with a gallery. And I know that there are successful galleries and gallerists who are still, you know, making it work. But the paradigm of the artist and the gallery has really shifted. I can't tell you, in how many years exactly, but with the advent of, you know, social media, people are able to share their work much more easily. And they're not just relying on the gallerist to show their work. I'm super fortunate in that, you know, I started making artwork when social media was a thing, and I could just share it and people would see it and respond to it immediately. I'm glad that, I don't have to disappoint a gallerist if something isn't, sold very quickly.
You know what's so interesting? There is a Netflix show you may have seen a couple of years ago about art fraud, and it highlighted a woman who was a very important person in that field, head of a major gallery. And there were some scenes where wealthy people would come in and say, which picture should I buy? Is this a good one? The enjoyment of art was contingent upon an expert saying it was good, as opposed to people enjoying it. Like you talk about, you know, Ken Saxon, you know, you're creating items that you don't have to ask someone else their opinion. It touches them in a real way.
Thank you, Neil. I agree. I think it's a totally visceral thing. I was watching somebody just show her home and her wallpaper, which she loved, and it was very Victorian. And I just take into account that people have different tastes. And for me, it's good because I don't take anything personally. If somebody doesn't like my work, I totally understand if they don't respond to my work. My work is very colorful. And some people like more muted things, for example. So there are a lot of people who like my work. And I think people should buy work because it affects them deeply, not because of the monetary value.
You know, I just thought of something. We're doing a radio show about a wonderful artist. It's sort of not exactly the right medium for this, but everyone out there will have to take our word for it. You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back with our final segment.
For prospective homebuyers, one of the most important steps of the loan process is getting clear and honest information from someone who will speak plainly and truthfully about loan programs and options.
I'm Kelly Marsh, Vice President, California of Cornerstone Home Lending, where our highly skilled and experienced team takes great pride in helping clients obtain home financing with honest, knowledgeable, fast, friendly, and efficient service. As a Santa Barbara native who has spent the past 20 years in the mortgage industry and has closed over 4,000 loans, I'd appreciate the opportunity to earn your business and invite you to visit thekellymarshteam.com or call my office at 805-563-1100 to learn more about how Cornerstone Home Lending can help you determine the best way to manage mortgage debt to achieve a more stable financial future.
Licensed by the Department of Business Oversight under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. California Residential Mortgage Lending Act license number 41DB072220. California Financial Lending Law license number 60DB072528. Loan originator NMLS number 245822. Not a commitment to loan. Equal housing opportunity.
When a bank is owned by the community and invests in the community, it answers to a different call. It's personal. It's driven by your needs, not ours. Welcome to American Riviera Bank, based right here in Santa Barbara with branches in Montecito and Goleta. Our customers know us for personal service every day, every way.
You can bank on us.
Bank on us.
Bank on us!
American Riviera Bank. Bank on better.
What's being done to address our regional housing crisis? How can we attract more businesses and create better paying jobs? What can we do to help people who are struggling? Let's talk about these questions and more on Thursday mornings at 7:30 and 8:30 as we provide information, resources, and insights into how we can help our families, neighbors, and communities become stronger and more resilient. Join Barbara Anderson and Aware and Prepare on Mike in the Morning on KCSB 1290 AM.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence. And Diane, I have a question for you. As
yes.
a financial advisor, are you finding clients are interested in buying arts as part of their investment portfolio?
I think most of my clients, when they look to buy art, they're looking for something that speaks to them. So they're looking at it as more of a use asset where it's bringing joy to their lives, as opposed to just buying something because it has value. And frankly, I think at least what I've heard over the course of this last hour, Barrett, that as an artist, that's really what you want. You want your pieces to speak to their owners and bring them joy. That brings me to my next question is when you're painting for you and you're creating a piece, what do you think about and what usually moves you to create the piece? Is it emotion that you're feeling or is it what's going on in the world or what is your creative process?
Well, it is very organic, my process, and very interesting too, especially with the abstract pieces. I'll you know, turn the music on, have a glass of wine, and start painting. And there's something so visceral that happens. Sometimes I end up liking what I've done, and sometimes I don't, or it doesn't, you know, it's not a cohesive painting. In that case, I just keep going, you know, I keep playing. I really don't think out my abstract pieces. And when a piece is finished, I'm always shocked at how much I love it. For example, Neil's piece that his wife bought, I painted it, I think, over 3 days of almost no sleep. And when it was done, I just loved it. I have no idea how I created it.
Now, do you love all your pieces, or sometimes you're done and somebody else loves it, but you're like, ooh, that's not my favorite?
No, I have to love it to share it, or at least like it, you know, but usually I want to love it. Sometimes it's hard. Sometimes it's hard painting with, parting with my paintings. I'd rather they be placed in homes where I might visit as opposed to strangers. But for example, the one behind me, it's not quite done, but I sold a larger piece like that to a client. And almost as soon as it left, I felt like I had to recreate something similar because it had brought me so much joy. So, yeah.
So if someone's listening and they'd like to peruse your work, potentially as a commission or purchase a piece outright that is already completed, what's the best way for them to go about doing it? What is your website and how should they contact you?
Thank you. It's my name, which is BARETBOISSON, which is a tongue twister, I know, BaretteBoisson.com. And I also post on Instagram and on Facebook. And folks can reach out to me. I'm really very happy to talk to them about any painting they might want to have me commission. Or have commissioned, I'm sorry.
So now primarily do you get the word out through word of mouth about your pieces and social media?
Yes, a lot of word of mouth, but I've also had, you know, a nice flurry of articles written about me. So I have been contacted recently by a lot of people who I don't know. And that's been really nice. It's been really refreshing and I'm grateful for it.
And so now, do you like doing pieces for people you know or people you don't know?
Both. I'm so happy to do pieces for people I know because I usually am in touch with them the whole time. For example, when I delivered Ken Saxon's painting to his wife, she just burst out in tears. She was so happy. So it's meaningful to me.
Well, thank you so much, Barrett. And I hope all of our 16,000 listeners buy one of your paintings, although I'll probably then not see you again because you'll be in some dungeon painting that many paintings. Thank you so much. Thank you all for listening. You've been listening to Money Talk, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you. Thank you, Neil. Thank you, Diane. Thank you, Richard.
It's 3 o'clock.